Hello, everybody. Welcome back to F&I Rap Chat. I'm your host for today, Mark Monks. And today I'm joined by writer, director, and actor Mark Ager and actor and writer and producer Siobhan. Eileen, is it? Eileen?
Ashlyn.
Ashlyn, yeah. Sorry, apologies. Today we're going to be discussing your brand new film, Blurred Lines. Before I get into it, I will say I did love it. I thought it was a beautiful, beautiful film. I thought it was fantastic. It's a really kind of interesting look at not only like different relationships, but also kind of discussing heavy themes like SA and also addiction as well, mm-hmm. and that sort of stuff. There's so many themes being put into it, and it's been doing really well as well. So congratulations on all the laurels and all the awards. Let's get straight into it. So please tell us just a little bit about the film itself.
We cover the topic of consent a lot, but I suppose through writing it, we realised how many different forms of consent there were. So we originally started talking about SA, and then we realised how many different levels of consent there are within a friendship group. So we had peer pressure, we had consent within an actual relationship, consent within a friendship group, I suppose being in a relationship that one person might want more than the other person wants. And so we centered around six friends on New Year's Eve. Mm. And at the party, a drink gets spiked, and all of these built up tensions and inner turmoils that have been going on come to the forefront, and all hell breaks loose, basically.
And it's funny when you start, as Siobhan was just putting out there, when you start like writing about a certain theme, then things just kind of fall into place. Mm. That's also about consent. That is just to the simple part that in the movie a character takes a group photo and one of the characters isn't ready for it. Yeah. And that was just a little throwaway thing of, you know, getting something that we needed for another part. But then we're looking into it, like, there's another form of consent.
Yeah, yeah.
A guy giving a proposal and stuff, that's another form. And, like, everything we're doing, we're like, are we geniuses? Or is this literally just the theme that's coming into play more and more, especially with, you know, our age group and so much of it has become like normalized that you can peer pressure friends into drinking, you can peer pressure anyone into doing anything as long as you try make it seem that they're being uncool doing so. And I think it kind of wrote itself in that way, you know?
Well, that's the thing, like when you were mentioning like your age group and that sort of stuff, like to me, when I was, as I was watching it, I immediately got kind of like Jonathan Larson kind of vibes, kind of, you know, the real theatre kid where it's like, I'm 29, what's going to happen? Like, I can't do, like, you know, I haven't done this, I haven't done that, I need to do this, that sort of stuff, you know?
Big inspiration. I'm 30 in like a month and I'm like, oh God.
You know, like 39, you're just repeating in my head, I'm just like, oh. But, you know, that sort of thing, like, and that adds an extra layer of anxiety and isolation, and especially for like someone like your character, Chris, where she's in the creative arts and doesn't really know what she wants to do yet. Like she has aspirations, but she doesn't really know how to get there, and she feels trapped and that sort of stuff. You know, and with that level of kind of like layeredness with the anxiety and isolation, and then on top of that, you have the sort of consensual stuff and the essay sort of stuff. It really kind of creates this atmosphere where you like there's tension, but you don't know where it's gonna go. You're like, what's gonna happen here? Like, what's this character gonna do? Are they gonna, you know, do something? You know, and like, I think it's really fascinating. I think it's really cool, especially because like the way you have it set up, most of it's in the house as well with the house party and the kind of whodunit with that sort of stuff. You know,
and we thought it was like fun to play around with the idea that maybe not so in consent, but in terms of, like, an audience bias, and we've seen it a lot recently in the world. No one. Maybe we can talk about, like, McGregor as an example of that, where I even have friends who adore him for the fighting.
Yeah.
But you can almost, like, ignore all the other stories and stuff that you hear about it. And we thought that was a really interesting thing for our characters. If you can lead an audience to one way, Mm. And when you pull that away from them and show them a new side to that person, is the audience still going to like that character,
yeah,
or are their whole prejudices against them
exactly,
completely change?
Yeah, like depending on what your relationship is with the character, are you willing to hear things you might not want to hear and listen to the facts, or are you going to create your own prejudice because you have a relationship with this person?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, we wrote Chris as someone that works in the creative arts because I think it is an industry that, I mean, we all get it, I'm sure we have, but like people are like, oh, when are you going to get a real job? And like, yes, I'm approaching 30 as well. And I'm like, oh my God, how am I ever going to get a mortgage?
Yeah.
But it's that societal views, that's not how you say it, but view on, I suppose, someone that's more creative and doesn't really stick to the stereotypes and the mold. And then by pairing her with someone like Brian, who very much wants to hit all of these milestones when he's supposed to.
Yeah.
And I suppose Lucas as well. It's like, who are you going to believe based on their role in society?
Yeah. And it creates kind of like a ripple effect that onto the other friends as well. You know, like Eve and Ash as well, where like, I love their characters, by the way. They were great. They're such a vibe. They're great. And then, like,
they're the most relatable.
100%. Because they're just kind of there, just witnessing everything. And it's like, what's going on, you know? And they have a lovely little bittersweet kind of ending as well to them as well, which is great. And yeah, it's a really kind of cool kind of way of tackling that. Because, like, you've got those three relationships then, and they all just kind of bounce off each other. It's really lovely. And, like, how was it, like, because yous were also behind the camera? How difficult was it to kind of separate the work from in front of the camera to behind the camera?
I'm definitely finding it a lot easier now.
Yeah.
I must say that I'm a first-time producer and I've absolutely loved producing this film. Like,
and
it
she's
has
amazing.
Been my but it's been my passion project.
Yeah.
But I did notice, like, when I was playing the character of Chris, like, I had to go into this psyche and into this inner turmoil.
Yeah.
And I became quite paranoid, I suppose, in a way. So I think if I was to balance both roles again, I would very much play a happy character.
For the next film, she'll be a happy person.
I'll be happy.
Who loves producing at the same time.
Yeah, because it was hard to kind of, you know, go into that place and, like, there's some really heavy scenes that I have to play and so I'm crying my eyes out and then it's like, okay, dinner time, you know? Like
it was
hard to kind of compartmentalize that way, but it was a great learning curve and I absolutely loved it, and now I'm absolutely loving that I did both. But I think hindsight's a great thing, and you balanced it fantastically.
Well, I was just gonna say, I think it was a lot easier for me because I'm trying to play this charming, fun guy, which I also do as a director anyway, just unfortunately, you know. But Siobhan's having to go through these really, you know, dark character moments where I remember a lot of my direction, especially early on in the movie, was I need you like 100 times more depressed. Like, come on, bring up the bitch level to me. Every time you see me, you gotta like get so angry.
Yeah,
and it was a hard thing for Siobhan. I wouldn't say hard now, but it was difficult in that way where having to juxtapose the two constantly, and I'm constantly telling you while you're in shot, like, you know, bring up the bitchiness, and then right after you have to be nice producer who's trying to do nice things for us and get things organized. And you were technically ADing as well, so like she had too many hats on.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Budget's a great thing, guys. You want lots of money.
Yeah.
So we've always said, I'm like, every little job, everything that we struggle with, even with the new movie we're working on, we're like, everything gets solved if you can just hire a new person.
Yeah,
to do it,
exactly.
You
know? Just,
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I must say to Mark, though, like, I think Mark was brilliant at being a director. And I think because you came from an actor perspective, there was a new level of understanding.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, the cast that we had were fantastic. Mm. And the crew that we had were fantastic. But it's funny when you were saying you resonated with, like, Eve.
Yeah.
But, like, we wrote Eve so differently to how Eve came across in Blurred Lines. And it's because Sophie just was fantastic.
Yeah.
And she just brought these new levels. And I think you, as a director, very much let her explore those new levels.
Oh, and you find it. Obviously, as anyone would know who's written a script and then goes on to make it, that what you have in your head is a completely different animal compared to what comes out in screen, to then what comes out in the edit as well. So if you get a cast of people, and especially a character like Eve, where, not that she wasn't important, she, I won't spoil anything, but, you know, she was a big part to play in the film.
Yeah.
But there wasn't much thought in comparison to our characters and, like, the big heavy hitters of it. So then when Sophie came in and just embodied it all by herself, you could almost just let her do what she wanted in a way, because she just brought herself to it, which was more than we could have even thought up of in a way, and, like, fleshing out a character with one of the smaller roles in the film, but making it feel so much bigger, the fact that it becomes a favourite of yours.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
uplifting.
Yeah, but I think they're those comedic characters that you needed in a movie like this.
Yeah, especially because such like how the content is so heavy, you know, and it's like it's really in your face about it, you know, and like not to say that, you know, there's no subtlety, there is subtlety to it, and there's layers to it, but it's it can be really like when it's all doom and gloom, it's really hard to kind of get yourself out of that, you know. So it's nice to have that kind of juxtaposition with the fun characters that just want to be there and vibe with their friends and just have a good time, you know.
A big juggle act that we had to do was finding that the part of humour, and you know, most of the themes and everything is very serious, especially in the latter half, but trying to still bring humour to it. I remember a short film that I'd done almost 10 years ago at this point. And I remember going to the cinema to see it, and everyone left that screening like 20% more depressed. And I was like, all right, never again. I can't have that where our films are supposed to entertain you, or at least make you think about something and, you know, take it in with you into your everyday life and maybe change something about yourself, whatever. That's just depressing. You know, by the book, trying to hammer down a lesson to you or make you feel something without giving you anything else, then people are either going to hate it or they're just going to end up.
Yeah. But it's also not real life.
Yeah.
Do you know, like in every situation, I think life's not black and white, and situations aren't black and white. And what we really wanted with all these characters is that they all had different levels to them. Yeah. Like, you could hate parts of their characters, but you could also really resonate and warm to parts of their characters. And I think that's why it's confusing.
Yeah.
that's real life.
Yeah. I find it really impressive as well that you're able to really, like, well juggle all these characters, because, like, they all have their own separate backstories, and, like, throughout the film you are learning about them, and, like, it kind of gives that kind of, like, Skins kind of vibe, you get me? Mm. You know, where it's just like... was that what you were going for, was it?
I wouldn't say, but I've heard it since, and I'm like, yeah, that's completely what it
is. Yeah, because, like, it adds that, because, like, if it was just the film about, like, oh, well, whodunit, like, it's hard to kind of bring out new ideas, especially when you're in such a isolating environment, when it's literally just the one house, a lot of it just the one room, really, you know. So it's interesting to kind of get that, and then it adds an extra layer then, because then you want to kind of see what happens to these characters, because you've found out more and they get really more a lot likable. Like for a lot of it, I've really liked Lucas, and then, you know, it happens and it's like, oh, okay, I can't really like Lucas now, you know.
Well, so that was the goal.
Yeah, that's the goal, you know. So it's a real kind of gotcha moment, and it's just a testament to how good the writing was and how good the performances were. I think it was fantastic the way you were able to kind of balance that out. Like, was it difficult enough to sort of balance that tone?
The cast that we got on board really wanted to tell this story. So I think it could have been a lot harder than it was. But I think what ended up happening, and because we were talking about consent and everyone had to deal with quite heavy things, everyone was very willing to discuss it.
Yeah.
And, like, even on lunch breaks and stuff, we're talking about different facets. There's one part of the movie where, just as a joke, I slap Brian on the bum going, like, get up there. Yeah. And we realise after, we're like, jeez, I didn't get consent for that. These small things that even as a director, you're like, yeah, I'll take it, go on. Like, we'll get the shot done. It'll add a bit of humour to it. But then realising, we're not even following our own guidelines, but having to think about that in the first place is something, I think. And we were saying,
it's fantastic that I think that we were forced to think about these things. And, like, you know, like, if one character was like, oh, I don't really know if... Or one actor was like, I don't really know if this is how this character would do it. And then us just discussing why. And then you're getting the real raw performance from everybody and kind of letting themselves tap into how they would portray this, I think. Yeah, it became a really open space of conversation. And I think we all came away learning something from it.
100%. Yeah. So many examples I can think of top of my head. It's like, say... Again, I'm so difficult for not giving spoilers. But we'll say a breakup near the end of the movie, and it was written in the script that they give a hug, or they give a handshake and then a hug. And the people involved were like, actually, it would actually be the other way around, that they don't want to do that. And just a tiny little moment like that where I'm seeing it from the actor's point of view of how, in their relationships, that would feel a more authentic way to do it. And it doesn't really make too much of a difference in any shape or form to the story, but being given the actors the opportunity to make it more themselves and not be... There's nothing worse than a director saying, okay, so I need you to take this in your left hand, you put that left hand over there, then with your right hand that goes in, and all of a sudden your brain is there going, oh,
it gets so much more technical, and it's so more difficult, because, like, you have an, like, I understand completely what you mean, because you have an idea in your head and it's like, exactly, this is exactly how I want to go. But then when you add an extra collaborator into the mix and they're like, well, maybe it might work this way. And you're like, yeah, I never thought about that, you know. Yeah, and then exactly, that adds more stuff to do with it. It's just a rabbit hole of just like, okay, well, maybe we can do it this way, do it that way. Mm-hmm. And will it work with the shot? Will it work with the lighting? All that sort of stuff, do you know?
As we've always kind of said now, like, we were, as going in as actors, we're like, we want to think of it as like a theatre piece in a way.
Yeah.
That we get a bunch of actors together and we do the scene as many times, and we just thankfully had a great crew around us that were like, look, we're just going to act, all right? You work around us.
Yeah.
And so literally you get the shot however many ways, and we were on a very, very tight schedule for it. Like, we shot 90% of it in 6 days. Which
Jesus,
is,
okay, yeah, right, okay.
You know, for a feature film, that's bonkers, and I would not recommend it, ever. But thankfully, we, because it was all set in the same place, we didn't have too much of lights and that kind of way to worry about.
Yeah.
So it was just getting our amazing crew to just film around us and hoping that we got enough footage from each one.
Yeah. And like, and our lighting, our gaffer Tamara, she won best lighting in a feature film, in one of the festivals.
Fantastic,
like,
yeah,
our DOP Ted Daly, like, he had some sort of like telepathic communication. Like, there was one, there was one scene that we were doing into the party scenes, the very opening.
I love that
scene.
Yeah, the montage. That,
yeah, the montage. Brilliant. Like, it's only about 4 minutes, but that took 8 hours to film.
Yeah.
And because we had a very limited crew and we had, we're doing that in two different rooms, like, they had to set up in one room, we shot it for about 4 hours, and then had to set up in another room and then create it and bring it together. But like, I think it was incredible because Mark was obviously dancing, doing his thing and just pointing, and Ted was just doing, and like, Tamara was doing, and Eve was doing, our set designer, there, and oh my god, when I first saw it,
but I remember
was just
you and me
away.
Were sitting outside, I was having a smoke, and we were just, you know, trying to figure out what the hell we were doing, and Ted comes out, our DLP, also freaking out, was like, Mark, what the fuck are we doing? And I just, like, showing him a picture of just this party with the spotlight coming down and it's real hazy. And I was like, I don't know, I was kind of imagining something like this. And he goes, got it.
Yeah. Oh,
and we come in half an hour later and it's set up in this beautiful way that just perfectly encapsulates everything and more than I could have possibly imagined. And
yeah. That was the moment for me, I think, when I saw that back and I was like, oh my god, we might have a good movie.
It's all like, about the start and the end of a movie.
Oh, 100%.
I was like, I love this. Like, it was, we had a great team.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's a good tone setter, the opening, 4 minutes, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
It's really like, because, like, from my perspective when I was watching it, it immediately kind of set the tone of, like, okay, these are great mates. These are my friends for years. And, like, it's, like, it kind of sets that tone of, like, oh, like, these are well-lived characters. Mm-hmm. You know, they know each other. Mm-hmm. They have been friends for so long. You know, they love having the crack, all that sort of stuff.
And, like, in an original first script we had, I think it was like a 4 or 5 page scene of that.
Yeah.
And it was a way to do the exact same. But we started to realize, and we're like, we can get everything we want without needing to actually say anything.
Yeah.
As long as we're showing them interacting in some ways of, like, you know, when Chris comes in, she steals the microphone off Jane and stuff. And it's not even like in an angry, bitchy way. It's just like how the relationships work.
Yeah,
amongst
the little subtleties.
The flirtations between our characters and stuff.
Or like when Ashley takes a drink and then she immediately has to help her. Like,
she's the drunk one.
Yeah.
That was a good way then of showing, like, immediately after that, then going into how the parties are now and showing how different it is. And the audience is already picking up, going, okay, either something's happened or the whole friendship group has changed.
Yeah, they've all
or they're just all very sober.
Yeah. Or they just become boring now. It's just like,
well, we're
reminding me.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the music, just thinking of, like, dance and, like, that sort of stuff, it was beautiful. Like, how did you manage, like, did you just get a composer in, or did you, like, pick different songs that you thought were just perfect for the scenes?
Bit of both. We had the original one is a friend, like, I've got a few friends, 3 friends songs in it that I had from the get-go, the opening and the end song.
Yeah.
And loved them. And not that they kind of stylized the rest of the music into it, because then we got
Kayla Murphy.
Kayla Murphy. I was trying to remember the title name of that score. Composer, Jesus Christ. And Kayla came in and blew our bloody socks off.
God.
Everything she did was absolutely incredible. And then we were like, okay, well, for the party music, I do want, like, real music, because, you know, it takes you out of it if you're watching a movie and you're just hearing orchestral stuff or whatever, and it's at a party scene.
Yeah.
It needs to be real. But then I remember going to, so she, anyway, she got a bunch of classmates of hers, because she was in BIM at the time, to just put songs forward.
Yeah.
And then I go to this event for all these graduates of BIM, and I'm watching 3 or 4 different performances, and I'm like, hold on, that's our song in the movie, you know? And I even talked to one of them after, and he was like, wait, what movie is this? And I was like, oh, great, you don't even know. But Kayla was able to just go in and get like perfect songs that fit the mood for each scene, just absolutely perfectly. Yeah, yeah. And it's still one of my favourite things about her eat while I was cooking.
Yeah.
And,
but it got to the point, it was like, the score was all, because we'd heard it so many times and we'd gone through so many levels of post-production that at one point I watched it and I was like, Mark, all I can hear is score.
I was like, raise the volume.
we were so used to the script, obviously. And then we had to be like, hang on, other people don't know this. Like, I was like, as much as we love the score, I was like, just let's bring it down a little bit.
And that is an issue, especially when you go into these screenings now, that we know the film so well that you could just like look back and just eyes closed, just mouthing along to it. You know?
Yeah.
But because we know it so well, we have to worry about, is the information being picked up by the audience here, or am I just drowning and out with the score?
Yeah.
And we still have a few sound issues that, you know, we would love to get back to and fix, but of course deadlines for festivals and stuff kind of prohibits that. So we still don't know. Like, there's everybody who's seen it does, they say great things about it and stuff, but I think that's just the life of a filmmaker is never truly been happy with the finished product. You're always going to go,
Can I change this? Can I change that? Like, yeah.
And you want to almost do a survey, going like, did you understand everything from the movie? Yeah. Is there any scenes that confused you with this and that?
It was a really scary movie to release to the public.
Terrifying.
It was, I lost, I think, 2 weeks of sleep just like overthinking.
I used to be overweight.
But it was like, did we do this message justice? And like, it was so scary to trust that we did. And oh my God, when we did our first screening, so our first screening was in the Stella Cinemas. Oh my God, it was beautiful. Oh, it was fantastic.
We had to go up and say, we'll start at the top.
But we invited the We Consent campaign to come because they had done workshops with us and they had really helped us, like, and we have their helpline at the end of the movie, which I think was very important that we did that.
Yeah.
But once we got their approval, I was able to breathe. Once they were like, no, you've done it justice. There's enough nuances. Like, you're not making the mind up for people. You're very much leaving it open to audience interpretation. I was like, I slept so well that night. It was just, but it was terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And like, I won't say that, that's a spoiler. But it's that thing of, you know, you have to worry about audience members' opinion. We'll say that, like, people can go into a screening and they're all super nice and friendly, and then they leave the movie and their response to you is a completely different Whereas I'm sure, you know, you cut the movie halfway through, they'll be like, Siobhan, you're a bit grumpy in this movie, aren't you? And then by the end, I'm so sorry, of course. If we can make an audience feel that way, then job done, you know? If it's in any way, I don't want to say controversial now, but if you can keep them thinking about it, I always say that a movie that is kind of cliche and by the book, 24 hours, if it's all a happy ending and everyone gets away with it and there's no lessons that make you come away from it.
Yeah, and there's no nuance, then what is the point? You know, you need some sort of kind of nuance or even just a question to have at the end of the film to have your audience talk and, like, you know, and see, like, well, you know, what are they going to do? Because, like, not spoiling anything, but like a lot of the characters, like there's not happy endings with a lot of the characters, you know, and you're kind of left thinking, like, well, what's going to happen to them, you know? Like,
we've even had people talking about any interest in a sequel, and that was no way in hell were we had even had a thought in our mind. But then as soon as, like, all these, and they were a much older audience asking us this as well, of going, they're like, they got really into it, of going, like, we want to see where their stories are going now, because like in my original draft, I wanted one of the characters to be killed.
Okay,
I was like, that's the justice it needs. And Siobhan's like, no, we can't have that. Having that thought and now going like, people do want to see where these characters are going. And they don't need to die in order for that to happen.
Yeah, that was actually very, very interesting for us, was like the different age groups that resonate with this. Because I suppose one thing that we've heard back through feedback is that this is very educational for like teenagers
100%.
And people going through, which is great. And it's not well, obviously it's an audience we had thought about, but going down the educational route was not something that we had thought about from the get-go. And it's very much like, actually, this is an avenue we can go down. But then we screened at the British and Irish Film Festival in Luxembourg, and it was quite an older age group.
Yeah.
And yeah, they really resonated with it, but they saw it even from a different perspective that we would have been the age that we are. And they were the ones that were very much like, what happens to them? Like, what's the sequel?
And there was one guy who was like, God, it's so brave. Like, your generation, you love talking about these topics
these
and stuff.
Topics,
you know, back in our day, you just accept it.
Yeah.
And that's the change that we need to happen.
Yeah,
exactly. 100%.
Mm-hmm. And we were even saying, I think, in that one that, well, give it 10... at least, you know, 10, 20 years ago now, and there wasn't even such a thing as an intimacy coordinator.
Oh, God, no. Yeah.
There was. And then, like, in our seminar, we were just telling the crazy stories, say, like, Last Tango in Paris with Brando and all these crazy things.
Wild stories kind of that come out of it, like, you know. Yeah,
that they got away with and stuff, and how traumatising it must have been for some of the actors involved, and how far we've come in that, and the fact that we're making now movies about how important that kind of topic is.
And that it's now mandatory in school. Like, it's now consent is mandatory as a subject, is it? Or
it's in like...
probably SPHE or something.
I was going to say, it's going to be a big... It's a big topic in SPHE.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
That was my favourite subject.
Yeah. But no, it's so brilliant to see that it's being constantly talked about and that people are not afraid to come forward and speak anymore.
Yeah.
Definitely. And going back to the justice, as much as it would have been fun to kill off one of the main characters, I was like, it's not justice that's in real life.
Yeah.
And I think that's the bittersweet thing we had to accept and that hopefully in years to come will not be accepted. But it leaves that question of being like, why wasn't there more justice?
Oh, we've got more statistics in my head now about this topic than I do of any other statistics in the world. And so now whenever somebody can talk to me about it or they bring up a story, I'm literally just giving them everything I learned from this film and like... I've no one to be given advice to now, but at least being able to relay the statistics, everything we learned from the We Consent campaign, everything we learned through filming it, I can go, look, it's important. If we don't step forward or say something, then you're just becoming one of those statistics that nothing ever happens.
Exactly,
no justice is ever served. So.
That's all it's about. Like, it's all about re-education about, and not like being like, you know, pompous about it, but like just, you know, telling people like this happens, you know, and you can't just accept it. Something needs to be done about it, you know? And I think the film really works with that. It really kind of helps open up that conversation, especially because it's a realistic depiction of it. Like like you said with the character dying. Like if the character died in the film, it would have been too over the top, and it wouldn't have been as it wouldn't have been an honest portrayal. Really, it wouldn't have been. And it's great to see that. Well, obviously not great to see, but you know what I mean. Like it's good to see like an actual like realistic. Yeah. You know,
but it was mad how. Like between, because we co-wrote it together, how my sense of justice against males, shall we say, was we got to kill him. You know? And Siobhan coming up from a much more realistic point of view of knowing that what women go through, or certainly a lot more to an extent than we do, of going like, no, it's not real. No, we have to bring it down. Yeah. And so we just, we had to compromise. And we're like, I need some justice. And just, I want none.
Yeah.
And then we just met in the middle and found this.
Yeah, but that's the education. Mm. Like, and I suppose as a woman, it's something that every woman, not to that extent, but every woman has experienced SA in some capacity in their life. And it's something that we deal with every day. And like, I know growing up that I was always told like, oh, wear a longer skirt and like, keep your keys, make sure you text someone when you're coming home, like don't walk home alone at night. And just, it's not something I suppose that you would have had to experience growing up. So it was just having those conversations and like that's why I'm so proud that people are having these conversations every day and that the narrative is changing and that men are taking ownership and but like I think that was a very interesting conversation for us to have because you mean like, well, yeah, you'd kill him. And it's like, I'm like, well, no, this is something that is lived by a woman every day. And then you being willing to be educated on that.
Yeah, of course. And like it was, and it came out in the script, hopefully, because we ended up having to just, not that it was rewritten in that way, but you talk about it and then you hear stories that, you know, women will walk down the street and if they see a guy like, you know, coming that way or behind them, they cross the street.
Yeah.
Or at worst, they take out their keys as any form of weapon.
Yeah.
And like that was just mind blowing to me in a way of going like you're thinking about it that much.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've had the same where you're walking down the street and there's someone intimidating coming towards you or behind you and you're like, well, better just scooch out of the way here just to avoid anything. But they're all the time going through that.
And that's the thing, like, because like I've chatted to a lot of my female friends as well, and like they say like something may not happen, but it's the anticipation, you know, and that's the scary thing, you know. You can't, like, they shouldn't nobody should have to feel like that just because like whether they're just walking home, walking to work, anything like that. There shouldn't be that kind of anticipation of, oh, there's a person coming down, what's going to happen, you know. So it's like, in a way, it's great that the film discusses that, you know, it really does help that.
Oh, it's very important for, sorry, I cut over you there, but that was important choices that I felt we made. Like, we had my character Chris in a short black dress, we had her holding the keys, we had her getting drunk, we had her walking home at night, because unfortunately in these situations they're some of the first questions that are asked if you report an assault. It's like, okay, well, what was put in place, rather than being like, why did it happen? Do you know? So we wanted,
what were you doing to antagonize it?
Yeah, so we wanted to like see it in true form, kind of.
It's like, always put on the victim. It's never like, it's never like, oh, okay, this is what happened. It's like, no, what did you do? You know, it's not like, it's time and time again, it's always just like, it's always just like, what did you do? You know, or did you take something? Or, you know, it's like, no, listen to them.
Yeah.
You know, hear them out.
Yeah.
Time always happens. I was going to say, with the organization that you were partnered with, how did you go about it? Did you reach out to them, or did they reach out to you? Did they see the film, or did you show them a screener, or what was the...
So we had made the film, and then, of course, I was having my sleepless nights, and we were saying...
I was sleeping soundly.
But we were saying, look, this needs a helpline, because I was like, we're very much going to open up a lot of questions, and I was like, are we prepared for some of the questions that are going to come our way? Are we going to be okay talking about this openly? So I reached out to them and I just sent them the screener and I said, do you mind if we put your helpline at the end of this? And they offered so much more from them. I think they're an incredible campaign and they're just growing the whole time. The We Consent campaign, I can't remember if I said it.
I've recommended them now to multiple
people. But like, we have they gave us badges and like we make sure we wear them in all the at all of the events.
Promotional material, all that sort of
stuff. But like, just from a support system, like, they were very much like, you are now going to be activists for this, and we want to help you know how to deal with the questions that might come your way. So they did a workshop with us and I think we learned so much more from that workshop than we ever expected to come away with. And I think even from like a producer perspective and a director perspective, like, we're in a new project now, but like, it's kind of
it's filtered through.
It definitely has. Like, we learned a lot from it.
The new one's dealing with mental health, and this is the month for men's mental illness. So we now, instead of talking about as like a character study, blah blah blah, we're always thinking about the themes more so, and for consent and like mental health and stuff that comes first and foremost.
100%.
I remember when right before our premieres were about to happen, that Blake Lively movie It Ends With Us was coming out. And we were, I was going to go into these screenings with a lot different of an attitude. I'd like written out a small like kind of stand up speech in a way to try and get the audience cool with it, and Siobhan sends me all these videos of like, just, you know, all the promotion that was happening around that, where Blake Lively wasn't really addressing the themes of it and the important message, and it came across quite bad, whereas the director, who was also the star of that as well, was only ever talking about that.
Completely open about it.
And it made us realise, like, okay, you know, not that we're going to be scorned more for it, not at all, because that's, it's the important part, and that's the reason why we made the film in the first place. And if we're not talking about that, then what was the point?
It's always easier to come at it from a more comedic view. Like, we're all we're all just people, we all need external validation. It's all it's easier to make people laugh, but like, we went into this with a reason as to why we made it, and I think we owe it to ourselves and the people we made it for to keep talking about it, and the We Consent campaign have helped massively with that.
Like, I feel like Brian's character and Jane's character kind of reminded me of David, did you just know Daniel Sloss, by any chance, the comedian?
No, I don't. He's
a really good stand-up he has a really good stand-up routine where he talks about how he found out that one of his close mates essayed another one of his close mates and how he went about that. And it's a really interesting look from the outsider's perspective of how you tackle such a heavy topic. It's, I can't remember the spec, I think it's called X and Y, but if you look up Daniel Sloss, it'll come up. And it's it's a really good, like, interesting look on how he reacted to it and how he could have done things better to help his friend who was the victim, you know? And even with, like, the whole Russell Brand thing that came out, he was one of the only comedians to come out about it and speak about it, because he said in his special that if anything happened like that again and he knew about it, he would speak up about it. And he did. You know, he was true to his word. It's one of those things where, like, even if it didn't happen to you, you know what happened. And you knew what happened to someone that you knew, you should speak up about it. You should be the front runner for that, because if you don't speak up about it, no one else will.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know,
100%.
We always say that, like, everyone's going to go through a different feeling of when it happens to them, but a lot of the time, if something like that has never happened to you, you can never, like, fully empathise or sympathise with that person.
Yeah.
But, like, why should we have to wait until something horrible happens to
us? Exactly.
In order for us to start treating it with respect.
And I think that's, going back to Jane's character, I think trying to find her reasonings for how she reacts in the end was a character. And we were like, it was tough, because you've got a best friend situation, you've got a lover situation.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we knew that one of the questions would be, but like, but why wouldn't the best friend believe? And it's like, we're trying to leave you without giving it much away, but it's like, why did she choose to stay? And you find out it's because she's going through her very own
trauma. You know, exactly.
And it's like, when you have all these different layers, like, yes, situations like this can be very, very black and white if you're not in it.
Yeah.
But if you're in it and you've got some attachment, like, it takes a lot for you to see it in a rational point of view with
especially
all the facts.
In the moment, though, as well. Sorry to cut you off, but, like, especially in the moment, you know, it's hard to, like, I wouldn't know how to react if I was in Jane's shoes at all, because, like, she's juggling so much, you know, and it's tough, you know. So I sympathise with her, you know.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's a thing of bias where she's, yes, she loves her best friend, but she's seen her best friend in certain drunken ways or whatever. And she might have already had a bit of jealousy or some thoughts before. And then the manipulative boyfriend comes in and, you know, he's just so good at...
It's just a triangle.
Her exactly what he wants. Yeah. And we even had, like, a mad thing where we're realising it where Chris is... It's an early spoiler, it's okay. Chris gets proposed
to. We're getting it all now.
Where Chris gets proposed to, and Jane's character is talking of, like, wanting to be proposed to.
Yeah.
But the time that her boyfriend gets on his knees is for this manipulation act, is in order to, like, turn her around back to his side. Yet Brian's on his knees, like, twice proposed.
Oh, poor Brian.
And we just found that such a funny or interesting mirror, kind of, in a way, where something that you want to happen, of, you know, a guy getting on his knees to pop the question or whatever, is now being used as a manipulation tactic.
Yeah.
I even had one guy, I don't know what it was like for you, but, like, the boop on the nose that my character does. And I had somebody come in at the start going, like, I do that to my kids all the time, and now I'm not gonna. I'm so sorry.
I didn't even notice that, Percy. I didn't notice that at all. Again, that's another subtlety, like, another layer to it. Like, I would say, before I chat about distribution, one more thing I want to talk about is without spoiling anything, your character and Brian's character in the bedroom is. Like, I thought it was so funny and so wacky the way he's, like, he shot it, and, like, the different, like, perspectives, like POV shots and stuff like that, and, like, the lighting as well.
Worried about that now, because that was the point, is to go, like, okay, we're having really serious discussions downstairs, but we can't just do it back to back to back, so we need to have the lad thing. And then we're also tapping into topics of, you know, masculinity, and it felt very, like, homoerotic in a way of these two guys, and they're, like, wrestling with each other, you know, I've got friends, and you get drunk enough that you're like, I could definitely kick your ass. And it just becomes, all of a sudden, you're wrestling on the floor or whatever, and it was trying to add some comedy interspersed between the more dramatic scenes, whilst also getting some character nuggets out of each of them. But it was our DOP Ted who was like, well, we do it on a fisheye lens, and it'll add a bit more of this warped, you know,
kind of paranoia, kind of, like, that kind of
feeling to it. And I was so against it at the start, because I thought it'd be too jarring, but it's, like, one of the biggest compliments
it's great
that I get for the film.
It literally makes me howl every time. I think my favourite line from all of it is, it was like, we could talk. I'm like, the girls are downstairs, like, bawling their eyes out to each other, and the guys are up here going, like, so,
what do we do?
But I think what's funny about that, from a behind the scenes perspective, is we were all sitting on the floor when this was happening.
Right,
so,
okay.
Like, they're literally doing this, like, manly brawl, and we're all, like, as the crew, sitting down, like, watching it, just trying not to, like, fall over with laughter. Like,
the most serious moment of that thing, where they're having this discussion about their New Year's resolutions and who they want to be as people and stuff, and we're really getting into the crux of it. And then my alarm on my phone goes off to remind me to do my Duolingo. Because it's like 20 to 12. And we're in the middle, I'm like, fuck, my Duolingo. And everyone's like, you almost had us thinking seriously at this point. But so many times
A breath of fresh air, that scene, though. Because like we had done some heavy scenes that day. And that was our last one that we did that day. And it just needed a laugh. Yeah. Like, and I think because everyone was just gone a little bit loopy.
Yeah, you did. Hilarious. at any shoot, at a certain point of days where you're lacking sleep and you're just...
Oh, God.
Just living off tea and coffee and stuff.
Just 12 hours in, you're like, I've got 25 scenes to shoot.
Yeah, it's like,
The other day, Siobhan just wrote a note on the door. I'm so sorry, Siobhan. Wrote a note on the door to try and say quiet on set, please. And she spelled it Q-U-E-I-T. So we're like, quiet. Quiet on set. She's also from Kerry, so it kind of worked with it. But like, we're all just so delirious at this point that quiet became the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah, and you're like, just the odd sex joke.
Yeah,
like,
we're children or we're literally getting sleep deprived and we're becoming delirious. It's one or the other, you know. 100%,
yeah. We had such a good time though, like, so I'm from Kerry.
Yeah.
And I was like, we're filming in Kerry, like, that was it. Oh, but the house that we filmed in is actually my parents' holiday home.
Right, okay.
Which we kept in mind when we were writing, because we had a low budget and that's why we ended up shooting it in like 6 days, because I was like, right, it's free this week. Yeah. I was like, let's go. But it became like a little holiday. Like, oh my God, it was so nice. And we needed it to be Christmas. But of course, it was like probably the nicest week in Ireland ever.
Yeah.
It was the middle of April. But we used to go down to O'Connor's Guest House, which is where we were doing all the food
pub scenes,
and the pub scenes. Yeah, but they catered for us as well. Oh my God, it was just a breath of fresh air.
And it's such beautiful weather as well. And because we're also in like a... We're supposed to be in party mode.
Yeah.
And the terrible director as I was like, have a pint, can I get you one? We're back to work in an hour. I'm like, it'll help with the thing. And they're like, I honestly feel it did in terms of this camaraderie that we were able to get amongst the cast and crew. And obviously, like, not saying that everybody was drinking all the time. Not the slightest. But the fact that we could have that moment of levity in between the work.
Yeah.
And like looking forward to this thing that we knew we were coming back from lunch with this new pep in our step to go like, ooh, isn't this scene going to be fun now? And now we've got a bit of extra drive or energy to do it.
It was such a tough script that I think we needed that camaraderie. Like, we needed everybody to be together on it, because you lose one person, you lose everyone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Especially because, like you said, had 6 days?
Like, not the whole film, just the house scene.
We always say 90% of it.
Yeah, 90% of it. But, like, you're dealing with the heavy topics, you have such a short time span, you know. Something could have easily fell off the rails, do you know?
Yeah,
but it didn't.
We're going to say, like, in order to make it seem like it was a New Year's party, we put...
Oh, my God.
We put tinfoil across all the windows, because apparently it's just, you know, it can...
Reflect,
and so just really easy to get down.
Yeah.
But of course, because it was like the nicest weather ever, we didn't realise that it was also as tinfoil absorbing the heat from the sun.
Oh my God. So it's just a sweat
her holiday home has got these windows that are probably like that thick. Big crack through the middle of it, which would have cost.
Oh my God.
I was this delirious. I didn't have time to care. I was like, as long as I have it repaired before my parents ever find out, we are fine.
Production will stop. It's okay.
But look, we're in Kerry. So, do you know, like when you're in small rural town Kerry, I was just had to make a phone call.
Yeah.
It was sorted. We were fine.
Just put up a note on the door. Don't rob me, please. I'll leave it to next week then.
It was great. But like that, at the end of the 6 days, like we had our little wrap party, and the next day we all woke up and we were like, let's just not go back to Dublin.
It's a 4.5 hour drive as well.
So we ended up going to Dingle, we ended up going for food, we ended up climbing up Peddler's Lake, and it was a nice little day. And we're all friends now, do you know? Been great. Like, everybody's been so supportive that's been part of the cast and crew. Like, we sort of a group chat, we went to all the festivals together, so it's been
we went to Luxembourg together and all. Like, it's a thing that, like, when you work, and it's on any project, you know, you find the people that you really get on well with, and you
100%.
Appreciate their work and respect what they're doing. And it's like, why wouldn't I want to work with them again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, as we're going into it, even like Ashley, Caroline Quinn, who's an absolute dote, was so much fun on set. We now have her back as my assistant director.
Yeah.
And like, she's got experience in it, of course, and she's absolutely amazing for the job. But it was that thing of going, I liked her, and we didn't really have a part for her in the movie.
Yeah.
So it's just like, we just get her back for AD.
Yeah.
And now we get to work with one of our favourite people without needing to
find a reason for it. Just collaborating with like people that you love working with, you can connect with, and you know, it's that sort of thing. Even with like the heavier topics or like even lighter topics, you know,
yeah,
it's at all, like no matter who has whatever skill set they have, as long as they're easy to work with, good to work with, mm-hmm. and actually are able to collaborate, mm-hmm. that's yeah. the most important thing. Do you know?
Yeah, 100%.
As I would say, like, the nerdiest thing ever, but I talk about being a director the same as like a Star Trek captain.
On the Enterprise. It's like,
you know, Picard, right? They're not someone who makes all the decisions. They go, suggestions.
Yeah. Right?
And they will take their crew members or everyone who's around them, their suggestions, and the best idea wins. Mm-hmm. And sometimes yeah. you might add them together or mm-hmm. Create other ideas through that way, but yeah. the director's only really there to get, you know, there's no way in hell that the director can have all the answers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you have to trust your crew. You have to be able to go, like, what do yeah. you think is the best idea
exactly.
for this?
Yeah.
If you're ever stuck, it's a collaboration, so you're all stuck in the same problem together, and it's just trying to figure out how best to solve it
yeah.
and what's the most pretty or nice way to do so.
Yeah.
And sometimes you end up coming, I've got an idea in my head as director of how I want a scene, and then it's completely different, but it's miles better mm. than yeah. I could have asked for. And you're like, oh, sick. Good job. And they don't get credit for it as well, which is the horrible thing, you know? And you don't be able to label every scene going, this is this person's idea. This little thing over there, that was their idea.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't, so.
The credits will go on forever.
I'll take the praise. Yeah.
But yeah, when I set up my production company, so Ash Story Productions,
yes.
I just was the producer on Blurred Lines because I was so passionate about it, and then became really passionate about producing. So yeah. We had set that up, and it's doing quite well. Like, we're now producing their one, but like, that was my whole ethos. It was like, I want to work with emerging artists that just have this creative vision and are willing to collaborate and teamwork, because like I was saying to you earlier before the podcast, like, I was living in London for 7 years, and yeah, I just wanted to be home and like make Irish stories. And I think Ireland has such a collaborative society, and like everyone is a creative, not just a performer. Everyone like creates their own work, and they really network together.
Even
so
the non-creative people
yeah.
have so much creative bones in them.
Yeah,
they don't
yeah.
even realize it,
yeah.
you know?
And it's just an area I wanted to tap into, and like, luckily from that, we're now doing our second project. We've got Caroline on board as our assistant director. Like,
and even having that's a to put it simply, it's about a Ukrainian refugee and blah blah blah. But anyway, the girl we cast for that, Maria, I'm going to butcher her second name, even though she told me the other day, Zdenova or something like that. Lovely girl, amazing. Yeah. But when she first read the script, she was like, Jesus, okay, I see what they mean about Irish writers. And like, what a weird compliment in a way, but I went around with that compliment for days. I was just going like, okay, yeah, maybe it is like, it's a worldwide thing that they consider the Irish to already have these natural skills in place in terms of music, in terms of storytelling and all this. And so that when you can vindicate it, or, you know, say to, or show someone that, yeah, we can do that, and they actually respond to it and agree. Jesus.
You know? Yeah, we're excited for this one. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, so before I let you go, could you tell us just a quick little synopsis about the film, obviously without spoilers now, because we want people to actually watch the film, so, you know.
Of course.
So Blurred Lines is about a group of six friends on a New Year's Eve party, and a drink gets spiked, and secrets and inner turmoils begin to reveal themselves as the night goes on.
That's how you do it.
Perfect. Brilliant. So, before I let you go, I know you're already talking about your next project about the Ukrainian refugee, but is there anything as well on top of that that you're going down the pipeline, or is it just that big project that you're working on?
We have so many in the pipeline. This is the one that we're working on at the moment.
Yeah.
We mentioned Caroline Quinn a few times in this. I'm currently writing a comedy series with her that we are very much going to get Mark on board in some capacity. Our runner. But yeah, Mark is writing, we're writing. Like, I think it's a collaboration that's going to go on for forever until we get sick of each other.
And Siobhan says she's got her 5-year plan from her
vision board.
Her vision board.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've got like a 3-year plan for, I want this film this year, that film that year, and hopefully up the stakes in each one. And because obviously, I hope to God, we're going to continue to work together forever. It's just about adding our two boards together and going, okay, we'll do that project then. And then hopefully if that does well, we'll have the money to be able to make this project, and then back to one of your things, and then back to mine.
Yeah.
And as long as we can just keep going the whole time, because there's nothing worse, as any filmmaker will tell you, of just the weight.
Especially
when you're not editing something yourself, or you're not involved in the post as much because you trust other people to do it.
Yeah.
But it's still that waiting process of going like, when's this new cut coming around?
Yeah,
and I can actually do something. And in that time, I think it's silly to just sit around and wait. You got to start preparing for the next projects.
Yeah.
I get that all the time because I sound mix quite a lot. I do a lot of sound editing and Foley. So, like, I'd be tipping away and getting emails like, oh, when's this? I was like, I'm still working on it. Give me a minute. It's like, oh, can we see this? It's like, well, you told me the deadline's next week, so I've got next week. Give me a minute. Like, it's that sort of thing where, like, they're just eager. They just want to see their piece, you know, because every project is their baby, you know. I'm sure it was the same with you as well, with Blurred Lines, you know. So they just want to make sure it's all okay, you know, it's all in a perfect spot and nothing happened, you know, nothing horrible happened. Yeah. You know?
But is that thing that a film will never be finished? It's only when you stop working on it that it's finished, shall we say.
Yeah.
So you'll drive yourself crazy if you continue to try, you know, pinpoint every little thing that you need to fix, because sometimes it can cause more problems or just... anything. So some, you just have to be done with it in a way. And if you don't have another project, then and you put all your eggs in the one basket for one film, then if that doesn't start to do well, then you're, you know, mentally going to screw yourself.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%. You
know, if you've got nothing else to look forward to, then...
No, lots to look forward to, so stay tuned.
Well, on that note, it was lovely having you on. Thank you so much
for coming
on. Is there any way where you can plug Blurred Lines? Can people go see it anywhere at the moment, or is it still
stay tuned, we're in some exciting talks, so fingers crossed. We'll keep you updated on the
Algram.
Amazing. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.